Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 437, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Hallish. I'm joined today by Kevin Boynton from the Computer Doctor of Richmond. How you doing, Kevin?
I'm doing great, thanks. How about yourself?
I am doing excellent. Just ready to talk some technical stuff.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, why don't you get started by basically telling us how you got started in computer repair, and then we'll kind of dive into your business, and you can tell us about that.
All right. So not to try and make this too long of a story, but I got kind of really started way back when one of those sober viruses was released on the world back in like the late 90s, or I'd say probably early 2000, because I was in college at the time. And I knew a little bit about computers. Like I had, I think, upgraded my RAM and maybe added another hard drive way back then, Windows 98. So I knew a kind of a tiny little bit, and I got a virus and I didn't know what the heck was going on. And, but I knew that there was this virus that was in the news. This was way back when the news was constantly talking about, oh, here's the new I love you virus and all that kind of junk. And I didn't know what was going on. My computer would just I'd boot it up, I'd get into it for a few minutes, and all of a sudden it'd just crash. So, and I think I got like some kind of command box that was popping up. So I went to the school and did a little bit of research and found that, all the symptoms kind of lined up with this virus, found the steps on how to manually remove it, went home, did it, boom, I'm back up and running. And, I immediately removed Norton at that point. I don't remember what I went to from there, but, I was frustrated because Norton said, you were protected from this virus because it had been out for like a month at that point. And clearly Norton wasn't doing its job. So I haven't looked back at Norton since, except for when I'm uninstalling it from customers' computers.
You got that right.
I think the best piece of software Symantec ever released was the uninstall utility.
It's a great tool, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Same thing I think could be said for McAfee.
Oh yeah. Unfortunately, it's hard to keep up with all those with all the different ones, and they all have good months and bad months and good years and bad years. But
of course,
but for the most part, I think McAfee and Norton are probably the two most loathed in the industry. I think
absolutely. From there I kind of started tinkering with computers, a little bit of gaming, kind of beefed up my system. I think I then kind of half built a custom system. I bought an off the shelf Dell, but really customized the heck out of it and beefed it up. And that was through college. When I got out of college, I was on a business management track, but I was kind of getting into computers, kind of liking it, and playing with some friends' computers and things like that. And went to work for a pretty big law firm here in town, but I was doing more of a mailroom, copy room, hospitality suite, meeting rooms management. So I was managing some of the employees that were doing those things, and I loved the environment that I was working in, the people that I worked with, but I didn't like what I was doing. So I started talking to some of the IT people there. They had a help desk of, 8 people, including kind of some of the upper network engineers. And started talking to them, became friendly with them. And over the course of about that first year, I found out that they had this entry-level job, this basically hardware technician and ghost image technician job that was coming up. And I kind of talked my way into it. I really didn't have the skills to back it up, but they knew me. They knew I was a good, reliable person, and they were willing to take a chance on me. And that's kind of really how I got my foot in the door. I was kind of lucky. I know a lot of people struggle to get their foot in the door in this business. That's how I did it. And I worked at the help desk and kind of worked my way up, like 2 spots over the course of about 2.5 years, I'd say. And, really loved what I was doing, but I got to the point where I was kind of stalled out. The people that were above me, they weren't likely going anywhere anytime soon. The firm, wasn't really growing that much at that point. This is back, 2006, 2007. you know, kind of right about the time the housing bubble was bursting or getting ready to burst, I guess.
Right.
And so I just kind of got tired of being in the same role day after day for, you know, a year and a half or so and not really, you know, doing anything new. But at the same time, we would always have lawyers and staff come into the help desk and say, you know, hey, my home computer is doing whatever, you know, virus, spyware, whatever. So it turned into a nice little side gig that I'd go out to their house on, you know, the weekdays or in the evenings, or they'd bring it into me and I'd work at it on it at home, and turned into a nice little side gig that, you know, I wasn't really doing much advertising at first, but, you know, word of mouth slowly spread. And then I decided I'd put up some ads on Craigslist, and word spread pretty fast there because, you know, back then I didn't know what I was doing as far as pricing. I was way super cheap, ridiculously cheap.
As we all were when we started, yes.
Exactly. I didn't know what the heck I was doing. I was happy to be making, you know, $40 on, you know, getting somebody's computer kind of cleaned up, and I was doing something that I enjoyed. And it wasn't until I finally, you know, actually placed an ad in a local magazine and I talked to the marketing person there, and they said that, you know, I don't think you charge enough for what you're doing. You really should, you know, call some of your competitors and see what they're charging and, you know, kind of find that nice middle spot, you know, where you're not the cheapest, but you're also not the most expensive. So that's what I did. And, you know, I called around and adjusted my prices accordingly and started getting a little bit of business from that advertisement. And, you know, of course, word of mouth. And I started a website, I don't know, let's see, probably 08, I guess, maybe.
Okay.
It's when I started the website, and then I migrated from that old, gosh, that was, what was Microsoft's web software?
Oh, Front Page?
Yes, Front Page. It was a crappy Front Page website. Oh, just atrocious. I mean, the clip art that I had and all the stuff, it just didn't line up. I didn't know what I was doing. But, yeah, so had that website for a little while, and you know, I got to the point where I'm thinking, you know, I'm getting some business. I'd really like to make a go of this, but I'm not ready to really leave the law firm or, you know, real secure employment, I guess I should say. So I started looking around for some other opportunities. I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do, but I found a company here in town. They're a mid-sized firm that has, what, 150 employees or so. They were looking for somebody. They had two in-house technicians, but these guys were just technicians and nobody really to kind of be the interface, the manager that worked in between these two technicians and everybody else, because these guys were geeks through and through. You know, they not very good customer service. They knew what they were doing, but just didn't really know how to interface with normal humans, I guess I should say. So they were looking for somebody that could take on that role more of as a contractor basis, because it wasn't really going to be a full-time position. So I actually took that on and still am doing that to this day. That's where I've got my office based out of, is actually out of their data center. That company has kind of shrank during the housing bubble pop, but has grown since then. And so it's a really interesting environment that I'm working with them. And that's – so I kind of split my time between them and then – all of my other customers. So it's a unique relationship that I've got with this one customer, but it's that kind of, it's not really an employer. It's more of a contract company that I work with, but it feels like an employer because I'm there all the time, you know, right. So often. So even when I'm not working directly for them, I'm still there, which they love. They absolutely love it. They love not, you know, having to call in somebody, you know, who has to drive there and then sit down and you know, manage projects and things like that. So it works out really well. They were completely open. They know that, you know, I've got Computer Doctor with them and I've got Computer Doctor with everybody else. And they've always been really flexible, and it's a really unique but fantastic relationship that I found myself in.
That's awesome, because you were able to make what your environment had and make that work to your benefit. And I think a lot of times technicians will look at doing business a certain way, or they'll see XYZ company and they'll say, well, I got to do it exactly this way, instead of looking for the opportunities that may be open to them right in their own backyard, and just, you know, making those relationships, you know, helping some of these, maybe some of these companies out and expanding from there. Yeah, that's a great scenario that you have.
Yeah, it's worked out really well. But I will also say that for the past, I'd say, 2 years or so, my wife and I have been talking about maybe me leaving that behind. Now, it's a big security blanket, so it's difficult to make that transition. But maybe me leaving that behind, because I'm at the point now where I can't really grow my business, because if I open up either a store or an office, I'd have to really kind of be there more in order to manage it. But that's not really going to go well with this other one customer. I mean, yes, I do go out on site for client appointments, but you know, it's to the point where I'm kind of stalled in my business, where I'm not really sure what's going to be the next best step. You know, do I want to just kind of stay where I'm at? And I, truthfully, I am happy. I get to do a lot of things with this one company that I don't really get to do with any of my other small business customers. You know, working on some network projects and working on, you know, some VM stuff that, you know, outside of this one customer that I work with, you know, the rest of my customers, it is mostly businesses more than residential, but they're all just small businesses. We're talking like mom and pop shops, you know, financial advisors that have maybe, you know, 4 to 10 employees. I think my largest customer outside of this one client in particular, they've got 25 employees. Yeah, 25 employees and like one server. So, you know, that's kind of the niche that I've targeted, because here in Richmond, it's somewhat of an underserved market. There's a bunch of clients that play in the mid-size and large business market. You know, those are the companies that they're targeting. But when I first kind of started targeting other businesses, there wasn't really a whole lot that was serving the real small clients. You know, the guys that operate out of their house, or, you know, the guys that, you know, have a small office where maybe one or two employees are in there, that kind of thing. So they're really underserved. And the good thing is, back then when I was doing that, they really weren't that different than a residential client. You know, most of their needs were the same as a residential
client.
So I was able to kind of grow my knowledge over the years working with these small businesses. And, you know, as they were growing and needing more stuff, you know, I was able to, you know, help them out by at the same time growing myself and my knowledge and what I can do. And I've also found that, you know, since what, like 2007, 2008, you know, the whole cloud revolution has really kind of been ramping up, as we all know. So a lot of these small businesses that maybe were sold on a server back in like the early 2000s, and the server, of course, is getting up there in age and not really performing and things like that, you know, many of them really didn't need a server anymore. They might be able to get away with, you know, if they had on-site Exchange at the time. Obviously, cloud host Exchange, Office 365 is a big product for us nowadays. Google Apps was for a little while, but most of my small business clients, you know, they're still so embedded in Outlook, they're not really interested in going to the whole Google interface. They prefer the Exchange environment, and it works really well for them. And many of my clients, you know, after that, the Exchange systems were, you know, kind of offloaded. They certainly didn't need the overhead of a real domain controller. It's just not something that they needed. Or more importantly, they didn't want to have the maintenance involved in keeping something like that up. But they still needed to have a centralized data storage. So I found Synology NAS devices probably 5 years ago, and I've deployed many dozens of them, all from around Richmond and even a couple outside of the area for some clients that maybe had like a satellite office. There's a town called Charlottesville that's about maybe about an hour and a half from here, that one of my customers, they had one employee here in town that came to me as a residential client years ago, and a couple times over those couple years, and they were starting to ramp up their business, but they were moving out to Charlottesville, and they needed a solution. So I said, well, here's a perfect solution for your centralized storage needs. You need a new router because of the environment they're going into. So I said, well, why don't I set it all up I'll give it to you. You drive it out there, and then I'll walk you through, you know, just a couple connections, and then I can remote in and finish setting everything up from there. So,
Nice.
That worked out really well, and I absolutely love these Synology devices. I know plenty of your clients probably know about them. They're fantastic, super easy to set up, very rock solid. I mean, the oldest one that I deployed, like I said, I think it's been about 5 years, and yeah, I've replaced both hard drives in it over the years, but other than that, it's still rocking, still working really well for them. So there's a big market for these small businesses that don't need all the expensive big servers.
Oh yeah, you know, I remember when I used to work on servers and different things, and you know, most of the time they were basically, the companies were sharing files. The number one thing. The number two thing was the people they were doing the accounting had to have access to the database. But to be honest with you, there was other things that I was setting up, like the, where you log in, with the door with a key card, you know, kind of mm-hmm. swipe the thing. Yeah. You know, on that, I had to separate that even from the server. And I just put that database in a workstation that was used for that part of the building or whatever. And so really, I mean, yeah, we had Active Directory and you could, have logins and all that kind of stuff, but it's not that you really needed it, because what was happening was people were going from more of the standard workstations to, hey, I've got my laptop and I'm bringing that in and hooking into the network and doing my work.
Right.
And they were still using the laptop at home. And so it really, they just needed access to files.
Sure.
To be able to work on. So it makes perfect sense that things are kind of moving in a different direction, especially with the smaller businesses. I know back in the day, a lot of smaller businesses were really sold on, you know, getting this server and getting Active Directory set up and setting up all these things. But there's a lot of things you can do from the router level now.
Right.
If you're just sharing files, you know, Synology NAS is perfect for that type of thing, or even databases, really.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and many clients, they may not even need, you know, their own NAS device. If they don't have the compliance issues that they have to deal with, they can just go to either like a Dropbox, more of a professional Dropbox service, or, you know, OneDrive for Business, that kind of thing.
Right.
I've got a lot of clients that are running on Office 365 now that, you know, we've migrated them one way or another, you know, whether it's from GoDaddy or, you know, something along those lines over the years. And that product has only evolved and gotten better over the years. I mean, we were way back before Office 365 even existed, and it was just Microsoft hosted Exchange. We had a couple clients on that, and it's really evolved over the years, and it's been fantastic. And very rarely do we ever have a problem with it.
Yeah, it's like any other cloud service out there, right? You know, the whatever it is, the 0.00001% that they might be down, you know, during the year is not right. That often. So
exactly. And one of the neat things that I found, and I believe I found it either on Podnuts or TechNibbles site, it was probably about a year ago, where I still wanted to use Office 365, but I was starting to have some clients where I wanted to do more of the billing and management. You know, I was getting to the point where I was starting to really kind of grow that recurring monthly revenue. I had my monthly managed antivirus programs and things like that, but I wanted to do more of a package deal for some of my clients. And I found AppRiver, who's, you know, kind of an authorized reseller of Microsoft Office 365 products. And then they can tailor kind of a white label service. And that's been great. You know, I've got, probably 10 clients on it now over the past maybe year. And I've got two that I'm in the process of migrating, one from regular Office 365 because they wanted to bump up to business premium and they were on an old plan that didn't really migrate. So one way or another, I was going to have to do kind of an Office 365 to Office 365 migration. So I said, well, why don't we do this? Let's move it over and I'll just add this on to your monthly plan already. And I'm in the process of doing that now. It's been great. So, you know, more money for me, better service for the client, and I have better management over it for them. So it's a really neat product. So if anybody out there, you know, is already using Office 365 and kind of being their own Microsoft reseller like I was, I encourage you to look into AppRiver to see if you can, you know, resell it as your service, but still, you know, an Office 365 product.
Now things like AppRiver, I think the difference too is they do some support of the Microsoft Office 365 stuff, correct?
Correct. Yeah, they are, I guess, you know, you as the company slash technician, you're kind of tier one, they would be tier two. And then if they need to, then they've got direct line to, you know, tier three engineers with Microsoft, which I haven't had to use that yet. Like I said, I mean, I rarely have any problems that need any further assistance beyond what I can help them with. But it's nice knowing that that's there.
And that is nice because, you know, in even though a lot of people beat up on Microsoft, they've given you two different ways to do this type of service. You can either have your customers paying directly to Microsoft for the Office 365 and, you know, dealing with it from there. Or, like you said, you can be, instead of being that reseller, you can basically have a distributor and more of a white label service. That's, and I think that's probably, for most people, that's probably going to be the way to go. You know, even from a small business, you know, to a medium business, I think that's where it kind of lays at, where you're having to do a little bit less, you know, tech support on that stuff, and you've got the ability to call somebody to help you out in those extreme situations.
Exactly. And one of the things, you know, with that migration that I'm doing now, you know, since it's an Office 365 to Office 365, I wasn't really sure what's, you know, what's going to be the best way to do that. And since it was going from, you know, the company paying Microsoft directly to now the company paying me, and that's going through my AppRiver reseller account. I just called up AppRiver and said, you know, hey, here's this project. They've got, I think, 8 email accounts that have been with Office 365 for years. So there's plenty of, you know, kind of historical data in there that we want to keep. How do we make this transition as smooth as possible to minimize downtime? And they, you know, basically guided me through the steps. And in fact, actually, I'm using a third-party product called, I think, Migration Wiz, which is what they, you know, said, here's what you do. You kind of go in, you give Migration Wiz admin access to their current Office 365, and then you go into your new AppRiver Office 365, set up the individual email accounts. You point Migration Wiz, you know, say, all right, I want you to start migrating, you know, joe at abc.com to joe at abc.com on Microsoft, you know, in this new AppRiver program. And you just basically say go, and it churns from there. I will say it's been a little bit slow. It's been going for a couple days now, but some of the mailboxes have, I think the largest one had like 40 gigs. So it's a little bit slower than I anticipated, but at the same time, my client, they're still getting all their email completely uninterrupted through their current Office 365. Once this historical data migration is done, then I'll contact AppRiver and we'll work on the actual, you know, changeover and the MX records changeover and everything else from there.
Oh, that's a great way to do it. And you know what? And to those people that think, you know, hey, this is, you know, this is kind of slow, you know, to those customers out there, I basically tell them, you know, 40 gigs of email is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. You'll never ever read through any of that stuff ever. Mm-hmm. You know, and I don't know. It's almost like we should have hoarders for email, I think.
That's actually not a bad idea, but it'd just be a horribly boring show. You know, and one side note, which is kind of interesting, that show, Hoarders, the guy who is like the main guy behind the show, his name is Matt Paxton. I've seen the show maybe like once or twice. He actually runs a company here in Richmond called Clutter Cleaner. I had no idea. This was actually a referral from another company that targets mid-sized firms here in town. This company got a call from somebody at Clutter Cleaner and said that they had this email situation that was really starting to become this unbearable monster, and they needed somebody to come in and help get them organized. This was actually last summer, about a year ago right now. And this other IT company, they don't deal with small businesses. That's just outside their niche. So they've become a fantastic referral partner for me over the years. And they said, well, here, contact, you know, Kevin over at the Computer Doctor, and they can probably help you because you're just you're not in our normal size, and we charge probably way more than you want to pay. So they contacted me. I went out, sat down with Matt, and again, I had no idea who he was because I think I saw the show maybe once. But after talking to him, you know, I find out, oh, he's this big, you know, somewhat big kind of sort of reality TV star here in little old Richmond. And it was just, it was really neat, you know, just talking to him and really finding out the evolution of his business and how he got started. And, but then more importantly, being able to really kind of come through and help him out with this horrible email situation that they had found themselves in. And it was because he had switched domains a couple times over the years.
You know, okay.
Like, I think it was like cluttercleaner.net to cluttercleaner.biz to cluttercleaner.com. And he had, you know, a personal Gmail calendar that he was sharing among from himself to two employees and contacts. And one of the business, one of the URLs was hosted with, I think, Bluehost. One of the URLs email was hosted with Google Apps for Business. I was like, all right, this was probably the worst email situation I ever found, and how just jumbled up it was and how they wanted to share things. But in the end, we were able to get everything kind of migrated over to each one of them having one Google Apps for Business email account, a shared calendar, and got it all situated. But I mean, it took me probably two solid days of just going through, making sure all the right forwarding, you know, from the domain host was put in place. And gosh,
oh wow,
you want to talk about a hoarder? It's just kind of, you know, interesting because they were definitely email hoarders, and they're out there trying to help people, you know, stop from being real hoarders.
Kick the habit, man. Kick the habit.
So he and I had a long conversation about, you know, sometimes you have to eat your own dog food and you know, do what you say, not just do what you what you tell other people to do.
Even though it's digital, it's still, yeah, it's still a pain to keep that stuff organized. Now, is there a reason you didn't move them over to Officer 65 in that case?
They were already pretty well adapted to the Google Apps environment, okay. You know, and they liked it, and they all were running Android phones. I don't think any of them were using Outlook.
Okay. All right.
And I mean, that's usually kind of my first question when I'm sitting down with a customer and we're talking about email situation. I say, well, do you use Outlook? Do you like Outlook? And if they really enjoy using Outlook and that's what they're comfortable in, I typically will steer them towards an Office 365 Exchange environment. But if they, you know, use Gmail and they like it and they prefer it, then I will go Google Apps for Business. And I think I've got maybe, including Clutter Cleaner, probably more than that. Maybe, I don't think it's quite 10 clients that I've helped set them up Google Apps for Business, just because, again, most small businesses, they just seem to enjoy using Outlook. I don't know why. I don't.
Right. Now, you know, it's funny because I've used Outlook since Office XP came out, probably.
Yep.
So, actually, no, even before that, I've been using Outlook for a long time. I prefer it because there's some things that I can do in there with my emails. Now, the funny thing is all my domains are all pointed to Gmail accounts, which I just populate using IMAP inside of Outlook.
Right.
And I personally have never had a problem with that. Even if I hose Outlook, or if it ever gets hosed for whatever reason, I can basically take the 5 minutes and go add my email accounts back in there, and it's all set back up just the way it was, you know, before I had the problem. So I've never had a problem, but I've heard a lot of people using Outlook and trying to use IMAP and stuff like that have had problems, you know, with things syncing and not doing things right or whatever. But I like your approach that you actually go and you figure out what it is the customer actually needs and what they're using, and you kind of steer them in that direction instead of going, hey, everybody needs to be on, you know, Office 365, or everybody needs to be on, you know, Google Apps for Business.
Right, so, right. And I think what a lot of it comes down to where people have trouble using Outlook in Gmail or Google Apps for Business is like the label system doesn't always work that well, you know, syncing up between the two of them. And you get, you know, I've found that if you go into Gmail and, you know, say, all right, don't show this in IMAP, don't show that in IMAP, that kind of thing, that will help, because I've certainly gone in and helped other clients that have already done that. You know, they set their business up with Google Apps but they're running on Outlook and they're wondering, why am I getting two copies of all these emails? You know, I'm getting one in my inbox and one in like primary and things like that. And that really kind of confuses them and throws them for a loop. And I'm able to go in and help them out. But where I think a lot of other people still have trouble is, like, if they want to have their calendar and contacts from Outlook seamlessly sync up to like their iPhone or their Android phone, it doesn't work that well for them, you know, while using Outlook as the front end. So that's kind of where, you know, I start that conversation. You know, if you like using Gmail and you have no problem with it, then we can kind of build your company email around, you know, Google Apps for Business. But if everybody, yourself included, like using Outlook, then we really ought to stick with a, you know, Office 365.
And that makes perfect sense because, you know, I use the Gmail calendar and I don't integrate it into Outlook. Outlook is used for email and email only for myself. So from that standpoint, email, I don't even use it for contacts. Everything is in my, you know, my Android phone is where all my contacts and everything are saved and on my Android or my Google account. So I guess I can see if you're integrating those, I guess I can see where there's problems because really there's no way to integrate those well.
Exactly. And one of the things that I've found also with companies that run on Google Apps, a lot of them don't really understand the whole label system and how you can have multiple labels on one email. You know, they're used to using folders because that's logical to them. You know, I can drag this one email into a folder and that makes sense. But when you kind of show them how you can tailor these labels and more importantly, you can have the filters automatically apply a label. You know, if you've got one company that, you know, you deal with a vendor or whatever, you can set up a label specifically for that company and you can say, you know, anytime that domain emails me, it automatically gets this label applied. And if you show them that, you take the time to kind of explain the difference between labels and folders, then that suddenly unlocks the power of using the Gmail interface for them. And they typically tend to like it. It's just getting kind of past that and finding, you know, where that power really is. And don't get me wrong, I mean, heck, I love using my Google Apps for Business, and I've been on it for a very long time. But it took me probably a year before I found the labels and figured out how they worked.
You know, it's funny you say that because you're sitting here talking about labels, and I know about labels from the phone side. But to be honest with you, I don't use them at all. And one of the reasons I still use Outlook is I use a folder structure, which when you're using IMAP works perfectly fine with Google too. So, and that's where I'm able to, once I've created my folder structure inside of Outlook, you know, anytime that I'm adding those Gmail accounts back in Outlook, it just seamlessly brings back up my folder structure again. And so I might be using it in a different way than a lot of people are.
What you may want to do is go on that handy dandy little site called YouTube. Have you heard of that?
Yes, that's a great site. Doesn't Google own that?
You know, I think they do. I think they do. But just do a search for Gmail labels how to or something like that. And they've actually had some good tutorial videos over the years that kind of explain why they do it the way they do instead of folders and things like that. And I mean, I absolutely love it because I've got, when any one of my business clients emails me, I've got a separate label for each and every single one of them. You know, if they're even a semi-regular business client, you know, for instance, Clutter Cleaner, you know, as soon as anybody from Clutter Cleaner emails me, it automatically applies a Clutter Cleaner label. And then if it happens to be an email problem, you know, that I'm working with them on, I'll usually apply, you know, a label called email problems, or if it's a hard drive problem or a virus or whatever, you know, I've got a label for, you know, many of the common categories of type of work that I do. So that way, when I'm done with that conversation with them in Gmail, I'll archive it. So it's always in their business label, their business folder, if you will. But if I need to go back, you know, a month later and see, you know, what did I tell them, I can quickly sort through and see, all right, here's the one that also has the email problem, or here's the one that has the virus problem, and I can easily find that and kind of segment that. So I may be a little bit of an email hoarder myself because, you know, unless it really is trash, you know, like, you know, just ads or whatever from Facebook, you know, for the most part, all my conversations with my clients, I archive that because I've got, gosh, I don't know what, 20 some odd gigs. And even though I'm still on the old grandfathered in free Google Apps for Business, right. I think I've got like 20 gigs of storage per account, and I've I don't know. Well, hey, I can actually look it up because now I'm curious. all right, so I've got 15 gigs of space, and I've used over all these years of almost never deleting anything, I've used 5.18 gigabytes.
Wow. Okay.
So, you know, there's not a whole lot of pictures, but there sure is a lot of content in there.
Sure. No, that's a good idea. Yeah, I definitely will do that. And I encourage anybody to, you know, especially when you're serving these industries and trying to figure out how to best explain this to your customers, you know, learn about the products and stuff yourself. Like I said, I've been using Outlook for so long, I'm just used to it. And so I use kind of this hybrid approach that works for me, but I really need to know, you know, what's going to be most beneficial for customers, because there are a lot of customers that are, you know, they might have been set up by somebody else on Google Apps for Business or something like that. Or, you know, maybe they're using a Gmail account and, you know, they're trying to figure out how they can best use it on their computer or workstation. So that makes sense.
Exactly. And I mean, I've certainly done my fair share of coming in and cleaning up after either, you know, a prior company or, you know, somebody in the company thinking they kind of knew what they were doing and maybe got it part way or maybe totally screwed things up. But, you know, that's where we've really kind of come in and been the champion for a lot of our clients over the years, fixing other people's mistakes.
Yeah, I was going to say, for all those companies out there, if you actually are listening to the show, I will encourage you that your employees that work there actually don't know what they're doing. So don't let them touch anything and just hire somebody and pay for it and it'll be done right.
Exactly. Oh, gosh. You're going to save yourself so much headache and so much money if you just hire somebody that really knows what they're doing. I mean, that clutter cleaner email situation was a perfect example. Like I said, it took me about 2 days to fully unravel and iron it out and make sure everything, you know, all these other domains were forwarding the right way. Had they brought us in before they tried to kind of get Google Business Apps up and running themselves, they probably would have saved themselves a lot of headache and money.
Exactly.
Hey, it's all billable.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, you're Fram oil filter, man. Pay me now or pay me later, but you will pay.
exactly.
You want your customers to be taken care of, and you don't want them to go through these headaches when they're trying to deal with this stuff and having to pay for, you know, extra time and stuff when you can come in and set it up right. And even if a lot of times if you don't know exactly what it is they need, you're going to take the time and effort to figure out what they need and walk them down the right path versus somebody goes, hey, I think this will work, you know?
Yeah.
So, all right. So that's a lot of great stories about Office 365 and Google Apps for Business. So what types of things do you do in your business? You know, obviously you're doing the same things that a lot of people are doing, but what types of things outside of the company that you're partially working for do you do on a regular basis?
Sure. Well, I mean, lately we've been doing a lot of solid state drive migrations, breathing new life into some older systems.
Okay.
We've got two on the bench right now, just returned one yesterday. So been really, really pleased with the results that has been doing. And that a lot of that advice, I guess I can credit to you guys over there at Podnuts is, you know, I certainly knew about solid state drives. I had one running in, you know, a system of mine for years, but it wasn't until I'd say maybe about November of last year that I kind of really started pushing it a little bit more. You know, when somebody comes in and says, you know, I've got this computer, I've had it for a couple of years, it's still a pretty good computer, I really don't want to migrate to Windows 8, that kind of thing. And I said, well, here, why don't we pull that old drive out, maybe upgrade the RAM, you know, make sure you have at least 8 gigs. And let's put in a new Samsung Evo drive. I've been really pleased with the Samsung drives. And we can do an easy migration. You know, if everything's running nice and smooth, Windows, just a little slow. Let's do a migration. I found a product. I know I found this on Podnuts forums. Paragon SSD Migrate, I think.
Okay.
I think that's what it's called. It's fantastic. I'll usually just put both drives in my hard drive toaster, you know, the new solid state and the original drive, and you know, say, here's the source drive, here's the destination, go. Depending on how much data they have, it might take an hour, might take a couple hours. I have had it fail a couple times, But, you know, it's easy enough to just go back and redo it. And it's, for whatever reason, it's always worked on the second time. In fact, actually, again, back to Clutter Cleaner, they're a perfect example, which just migrated. Well, we were trying to migrate two of their drives or two of their laptops up to solid state drives, but one of them failed. And unfortunately, he was on a very, very, very tight time deadline. This was, I think, over the July 4th holiday. I picked it up on, picked the computer up on Friday afternoon. You know, we had arranged this ahead of time. I said, I'll take it back to the shop. I'll get it cooking. It'll cook over the weekend. I'll get in there early Monday morning, check, make sure everything goes fine, and then I'll bring it out to you, because he was jumping on a plane to head out to a, you know, a hoarder's shoot. So I got into the office on Monday morning, pulled both drives out of the toaster, put them into the two computers. One fired up right away. The other one blue screened. It's like, oh, crap, I don't have time to troubleshoot this. So I just obviously pulled his original hard drive and put it right back in. So it's not like he lost anything. He just didn't get that performance gain. So he's flying all around the country all the time. So we're currently waiting to find out when he's going to be able to be without his computer for a little while longer again. So, but yeah, solid state drives, man, for the little bit of investment, it's such a huge payoff for these customers. I mean, and they absolutely love it, because it's like their computer is like a Lamborghini all of a sudden. I mean, even when we know it really isn't all that much faster, it feels so much faster for them. And that's what's important.
That's good. Now, are you doing any type of cleanup on the drive before you actually, go to clone it? Or are you just cloning it in the condition it's in and then moving it over?
It depends. I've got one here in the office right now where I know Windows has been having some problems. He's been having some driver issues with his Wi-Fi card. He's been having some other issues, things like that. So instead of actually doing a clone for him, we're actually going to do a full migration. So put in – actually, I think it's running right now. We got the solid-state drive in, getting Windows installed fresh and clean. And then we're going to migrate his data. So for him, it's not going to be a clone. It's going to be an actual migration. And he of course, knows that, because typically what we'll do is we'll say, is everything running pretty well? Are you happy with how it's running, except it's slow? And if they say yes, then we'll typically do a clone. We'll, of course, check everything out first, make sure that, we don't find any viruses. There's not a lot of crap that needs to be cleaned up, that kind of thing. But if they're happy with it, we'll do a clone. If they have been muddling through, viruses over the years or something along those lines, we'll do a migration.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I think for when I've been cloning from a regular hard drive to an SSD, I've been using Acronis True Image 2015, because I know that one does work with that. But I was just thinking about something as you were talking about this, and I was thinking, I wonder if my hardware solution, where I have a hardware toaster with two drives, if I can put a regular drive and an SSD in there and actually just use the hardware cloner to clone that. And I wonder if that would work, or...
Well, I mean, I would suspect it would. Now, I had some problems with Acronis. It might have been 14. I don't remember if it was 14 or 15, where I tried to actually do a clone of one of my – actually, it's the laptop I'm on right now. Now I think about it, where I just – this is one of my main Rode laptops, and I wanted to put a solid state in it to make sure I have that good kind of rugged stability from the solid state drive. And It is Windows 8, and it would not clone. I tried every which way. I even went on TechNibble and asked, and that's when somebody actually pointed me towards this other software, this Paragon, SSD Migrate. I think it was like $30 for the software, and it's, like I said, it's been really good ever since. I mean, and that's what it's designed for. It's designed to take typically a larger hard drive, bring it down to a smaller system. As long as, of course, you've got enough storage available on that smaller drive, it has no trouble kind of restructuring the partitions and getting it done right, no matter. And I've done Windows 8, done Windows 7, and all the way down. Well, yeah.
Now, let me ask you a question, because I know that I had a customer that basically tried to clone their own drive, and they were using ESUS. Now, this was just a regular spinning drive to another spinning drive, and they went from a smaller drive to a larger drive. Part of the problem was it only cloned... I think it was 256 gigs or 250, whatever it was. It only cloned that to the other drive. So you had all this space on the drive because she had bought a terabyte drive, and you couldn't get to any of that other information, and you couldn't extend the C drive because in this particular situation, the recovery drive ended up being on the right-hand side of it.
Hmm.
So
that's odd.
So you can't. Well, I mean, a lot of times it is like that, but it's just I was always wondering, is there a way to, you know, move that over where it opens the whole drive up? So does Paragon do that?
Well, I don't know that. I don't think that that product in particular would do that. And I have certainly had several times where when I'm cloning one drive over to a solid state drive where, you know, say, for instance, if the original C drive is 150 gigs and you clone it over, the C drive on the solid state drive, even though the solid state drive might be 250, still has, you know, it only ends up cloning over to be about 150 gigs. So you have all that excess space at the end. In most cases, you know, Windows 7, Windows 8, you can just go in and basically, you know, go into Disk Manager, right click and say, you know, extend the C volume to take up that extra space. Now, in what you're talking about, if I came across a situation like that, what I would personally do is I would boot that computer up to either Linux Mint or Ubuntu, or you can just even use Gparted itself. That Gparted has its own live CD, and that's what both Mint and Ubuntu use. You boot up to that, and you just take that recovery partition in Gparted, and you slide it all the way over to the right, hit apply. That's going to take a while because it's actually taking the data and it's that whole partition, and it's moving from, you know, the middle of the drive all the way to the end. And then once that's done, then you just take that C drive and expand the volume into all that empty space. So it might take some time. And I have come across that kind of situation over the years where I've had to do something like that. But it's simple enough. It just takes some time for that data to kind of move.
Well, what's interesting about this situation, and maybe it was me, and maybe I was, you know, doing something wrong. I did actually try to use Gparted to move that partition, and it wouldn't do it. So, again, it could. I've not used Gparted a whole lot over the years, so I'm not an expert at it or anything like that. So I basically found a product that I could use inside Windows, and it's the AOEMI, I think it is, Partition Manager. Anyways, basically that was able to move the partition over and open up that space there. So
yeah, can't say I've ever heard of that product. I'll have to check it out. Because I mean, for the most part, I've always had pretty good success with Gparted one way or another. I think there might have been a time or two over the years where it may have failed for one reason or another, but it's been very rare, and I've used it quite a bit. Not so much lately, just haven't had a need for it, but I know I've used it a lot over the years.
Yeah. It's a great product, and you know, I've used it for many different things. It's just in this particular case, I couldn't move that recovery partition over.
So. Interesting.
Yeah, you know, that's why we do what we do, because there's always going to be a tool that you can find that's going to be able to do what it is you need to do, you know, and be able to extend that, you know, 600 and some odd gigs of partition space.
Exactly. Well, what's important about this job is you got to make sure you have the good wherewithal to be able to troubleshoot. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And I know you've said it time and time again. I grew up in a house where we fixed our washer, we fixed our cars, things like that. You know, my dad, he was a very much do-it-yourself kind of guy, even more so than I am in many ways. There's certainly plenty of things that I'll pay nowadays to have somebody do. But, you know, I grew up in a house where we fixed all of our own stuff. And if we didn't know how, we just banged on it with a hammer till it either was totally dead, you got to replace it, or, you know, you figured it out. And then, you know, my first real job in high school, I worked at Chuck E. Cheese as a game technician, you know, fixing games and fixing coin jams and putting up with screaming kids that threw a ski ball into a pinball glass and shattered the glass. You know, I got my start, you know, doing that kind of crap. And, you know, I was pretty good at troubleshooting. I didn't know anything about electronics really. And, you know, all the games and how to fix them. I just kind of figured my way out through a lot of it. And that really kind of gave me a good aspect of how to troubleshoot.
Yeah, exactly. No, yeah, I grew up the same way where, you know, basically my parents, you know, really did a lot of things to, you know, teach us to do things for ourselves. I mean, I never received a new bicycle, and this is not a, you know, oh, woe is me story or anything like that. My dad would, you know, find a bicycle that somebody was throwing away. He'd bring it home. He would strip it down, you know, give it a brand new paint job, put everything back together. You might have to replace a few parts here or there, you know, kind of clean the chrome up and stuff like that, put a new seat on there. And, you know, it was great. But, you know, through that process of watching him, you know, fix that stuff up, that's kind of where I think I got a lot of it from, is that, you know, I understand that it's good to know how to fix things. And even my children, you know, when they got their first cars and stuff, I made them, you know, change oil, rotate their own tires. And I told them, I said, listen, it's not, if you want to pay to have this done, which, you know, I do now, because I don't really care to do it anymore. Right. But for them, I'm like, I at least want you to know a little bit, so that if you do end up taking it to somebody, you're not getting, you know, hosed by them and they're telling you you need this, this, and this when you really don't. So I said, you just have a little bit of knowledge to where you know what you're talking about and you can explain it to somebody that's, you know, working on whatever.
Exactly. Well, like you said in one of the recent podcasts, knowledge is power. I mean, it's really exactly 100% true. If you know even a little bit, you know, a mechanic's not likely to be able to take advantage of you. And I'm the same way. You know, I've actually got a good relationship with a mechanic here in town that I do their computer work and manage their computers, and we do work on trade. So I haven't paid for an oil change directly out of pocket in years. So I take my car to them for oil changes and if there's anything serious, but you know, I still like to tinker on my car. You know, I put in a cold ram air intake on my car not that long ago, changed out one of the engine mounts, and I even reflashed the computer. So I still like to work on cars, but it's nice now being able to make that decision whether if I have to, I can. If I don't want to, I can take it somewhere. But I know that I'm not going to get taken advantage of because I know a little bit about a lot of these things. And that's exactly. Kind of, yeah, that's one of the things that's most important for technicians, whether you're going to be more of a managed service provider or a hardware technician or whatever. You still need to be able to know how to troubleshoot something.
Yep, exactly. Now, speaking of managed service providers, since you brought it up, now, are you doing any type of managed services yourself?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'd say probably the vast majority of our business clients we've got under a managed service agreement. I've taken kind of the Matt Rainey cue over the years. You know, I used to love listening to Podnuts Pro, and I'm sorry that show has kind of pod faded, but I love hearing him when he comes on as a guest speaker on your show, because he's who I want to be when I grow up. I want to be Matt Rainey when I grow up, because just so much knowledge that he was able to impart on me over the years of listening to Podnuts Pro, and just the little tips that he probably didn't really think meant much, you know, really kind of came through and hit home with me. And you know, truthfully, I don't have any of my business clients under a real contract, which I know there's probably a lot of MSPs out there that are going to hear that and cringe, but I know, you know, Matt, he's like, we don't really have anybody under a contract. We have them under more of an agreement, which, right. You know, here's what we'll do. Here's what your responsibilities are. You know, here's what we charge, that kind of thing. And they make it nice and comfortable on the client. And that's the road that I've taken over the years is, you know, when I'm talking to whether it's an existing business client that I'm trying to convert to a managed service client, or it's a brand new client that I'm trying to go that route, you know, I let them know, you know, I don't sign my customers into contracts, because I have seen the aftermath and the frustration that many of them have gone through when they've been under a contract with another provider, and it's been a horrible relationship. I want my clients to be able to, if I'm not performing, they should be able to take their business elsewhere. And, you know, I've given them that flexibility. I just say, you know, just give me 30 days notice is all I ask. And I've never had anybody that's canceled. You know, I don't mean to sound like I'm bragging, but I've never, ever had a managed service client that's, you know, gone elsewhere for their business. So maybe that's a tip for somebody else to kind of think about when they're thinking about how they want to do their managed service customers. You know, try and maybe just giving them more of a flexible agreement. You know, map out what you're going to do, map out what their responsibilities are and when they need to pay. But, you know, if they need to take their business elsewhere because you're not performing, they should have that right and that flexibility. And I also share all my documentation with my customers, you know, because it's their computers.
Right.
So I think that even though I control the documentation, I still share it out with them because, again, you know, heck, what if I get in a car accident and I die, or if I win the lottery and I say, you know, peace out to the whole world, I'm going to go to Tahiti. They still have a business they have to run. They still have employees that rely on them and customers that rely on them, and they need to be able to have that capability. So I share my documentation with all my clients. Now, most of them have no clue when I turn around and ask them a year later if they're not even if they're not even a managed service client. I ask them, all right, what's your password for this? I don't know. You told me. Well, what does your documentation say? You know, I don't know. And then I have to go out and pull out my documentation, I did and say, okay, here it is. You know, you remember when I sent you this, you know, a year ago and I told you to print it out and, put it in a secure binder in your file cabinet and lock it up? Yeah. Did you do that?
No.
Okay. Well, all right. Well, here it is again. Now I've updated it with a new password. Go do that.
Well, it's good for I'm a firm believer in giving that documentation up. Even if another company were to come in, I would share the documentation with here's all the stuff, because it's not worth it if the relationship between you and your client is not there anyways. So I'm perfectly fine with that. And like you said, and it could be you're not performing to their standards, but it could be where, you're busy and, maybe they need something, somebody with a more of a one-on-one approach. Who knows? It's not necessarily that the work is not being done, but, things can change. Things can happen. And that's perfectly fine. There's plenty of people out there that need help, and I don't have to have every one of them.
Exactly. Yeah, there's plenty of business out there, and if you screw up with a client, or maybe the client's being unreasonable.
Sure.
Certainly had plenty of those over the years, where for whatever reason or another, I said, all right, well, I think you need to find somebody else to take care of your computers from now on, and certainly plenty of them have come crawling back. I'll never forget one of the first business customers that I was really kind of targeting. I had a couple business customers already that had kind of fallen in my lap through referrals or whatever. But one of the first business customers that I was targeting, they were a new restaurant, or they were in construction phase of a new little restaurant downtown. And I knew that this kind of environment, they were probably going to want to have a Wi-Fi hotspot set up for their customers. And this was in 08, maybe? I don't know. Whatever. And that was something that I wanted to do. I wanted to be able to give them that public hotspot and, take over, manage their computers and things like that for them. So I sat down with the owner. In fact, actually, I took the owner out to lunch at a restaurant. Me thinking I'm going to be it's kind of, I don't want to say big hot shot, but, doing something really kind of cool. This was the first time I had done anything like that. I'm going to take them out to lunch, kind of do a little schmoozing of them and see if I can get their business. And I ended up not getting their business. They took their business to another provider who I know ended up having more experience. I don't know if they were cheaper or what, but this provider definitely had more experience. They set them all up. Fast forward 2 years later, it was the summer. It was summertime, and I had gotten word from this other IT company that had been a referral partner. In fact, they're the ones that sent Clutter Cleaner my way, that they had hired on guy A. He had shut his own personal practice down, IT practice down, and they had hired him on and brought in many of his customers, but some of his customers were just too small and weren't going to fit for them. So they said, we're going to probably send some customers your way. And in fact, they did. I still have several of them to this day, and they've been great customers of mine. But this restaurant was one of his customers that when he went to work for this other IT company, this mid-size IT company, they didn't take the restaurant on. And I guess they didn't communicate, or the guy that shut his practice down didn't communicate to the restaurant what he was doing. Because when this restaurant called me, they said, or the owner, she said, I still remember you taking us out to lunch, and I'd like to use your services now. And I said, okay, talk to me, what's going on? They told me it was a printing issue. I said, okay, well, what's going on with your current IT guy? I know you took your business in a different direction. Said, well, he hasn't called us back in about a month and a half now. We've been emailing him and calling him. And as soon as she's telling me this, I know who she's talking about. I know she went with this, guy that shut his practice down. And I said, let me guess, you're talking about whatever his name was. And she said, yeah, how'd you know? I was like, well, let me tell you, he shut his practice down. A lot of his customers have come my way. I would certainly be happy to help you out, but I'm not going to be able to help you out for, you know, another week, because actually she called me on a Friday. I'm going on vacation this whole next week, and I can help her out when I get back. And she's like, oh, I'm sorry. That's just not good enough. I need it done now. It's like, well, you've been waiting a month and a half with no response from guy A. If you can't wait another week and a half, then, you know, have fun. Go find somebody else. You know, I didn't say it as rude as that. Sure. But it's like, you can certainly go somewhere else. I'll be happy to help you when I get back, but I'm going on vacation, you know. And she's like, I'm just going to have to go somewhere else. And I could tell she was frustrated at me. It's like, well, lady, you know, if you had gone with my service in the first place, I'm still here. I'm still working. And you wouldn't have had this problem. You know, I would not ever leave my clients high and dry like he left you high and dry, not letting you know that he was shutting his practice down. Right. So, you know, you want to take your business elsewhere, go ahead. And so she did. I haven't ever heard back from her, and who knows, maybe I never will. So I don't care.
It's funny how people think that, you know, you have no life or no, you know, no calendar yourself where you can just drop everything and just deal with it. Like, they're the only customer that you have that you take care of.
Exactly. Gosh, I mean, we've all heard it. You know, this is a rush. I need this done right away. It's like, well, you know, I'm sorry, but you're going into a queue when you get into the office. And, you know, unless you want to pay to jump in line, you know, we'll get to it when your turn comes up, you know, when we ever bring anything into the office. You know, if it's a managed service customer, of course they're going to have priority. Absolutely. And, you know, that's what I've converted several businesses that way. You know, I told them about my managed service plan, and they weren't interested, but now suddenly they call up and they've got an urgent issue. Well, I can help you out in a day when, you know, I'm currently out on site with other clients, but, you know, when I'm done here, I can come help you out. Well, how can we get priority? Well, you can get priority and I'll drop what I'm doing, to come help you out if you become a managed service customer. And
that's a good selling tip there.
Exactly. I mean, you don't want to ever put it rude like that.
Right.
You want to make sure you come off, you know, being the hero. You know, I can drop what I'm doing and come help you out now, but, you know, here's my emergency rate. I'm going to have to call my other customer that I'm, you know, heading to their appointment and let them know that I'm going to bump them. You know, I've had a customer come up with an emergency, but here's my emergency rate. And then, you know, once we get this issue resolved going forward, if you'd like to become a monthly managed service customer, then we can have more of a agreed upon response time.
Now, what do you do as far as managed services? What types of things are you providing?
We are a GFI or whatever their new name is.
Max Focus.
I can't keep track. I still call them GFI.
So. Yeah, I do too.
We're a GFI shop. I actually use Chris's white label service for a lot of it's typically more residential stuff, you know, virus cleanups, things like that, you know, things that either I don't have the time to or don't want to work on. You know, it's great having that as a resource. I was with computer support hotline way back when it went to Chris, and then he transitioned it over to remote support tech team, and I've been pretty pleased with the services since he started up, what, about a year and a half ago, I think?
Yeah, something like that. About that, yeah.
And Chris is a great guy. I really like working with him. And he's always been very responsive. And sometimes it surprises me, you know, because I know he's got other customers that he deals with, which are, you know, bigger and bring in more volume. But he's always been, you know, very responsive. There's been plenty of times where he and I have been, you know, chatting back and forth through email at like 1 a.m. because we're both up still working.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, that's true. That's Chris.
Yeah. But, you know, so we're a GFI shop. We use that for, you know, our managed services. And, you know, many of our clients that have the Synology NASs, we kind of roll that in and do manage service on the Synology at the same time, which fortunately, for the most part, they really don't require hardly any management, with the exception of if the client needs to add a new employee or a new share and things like that, that they're just not sure on how to do themselves. And some of my Synology NAS customers, they use us as their offsite backup, because with a Synology NAS, you're kind of limited on how can you do offsite backup. And I actually had a customer, one of my first customers that we did a NAS deployment on, they wanted two NASs. They wanted one in the office and one in the president's home, and the one in the office would back up to the one in the president's home. And I got to thinking, well, you know, hey, that's actually a good idea. I can you know, set up my own server here in the office and, you know, kind of resell that as a offsite backup service. And we actually had a customer that we had to use it on where they had a fire in their office. So their NAS was destroyed and so was their external backup that was serving as the primary data backup. But they still obviously had to keep going with business. And I was able to basically just give them remote access to their share on our NAS, which had all their, you know, current data on. So they were able to gain access to everything they needed to and limp along until they are ready to get up and running with their own new NAS and just restore down from our backup. For the most part, it's been kind of easy money as far as that's concerned, because that's the only client that we've ever really had to use it on. And they know that we have our server here in the same region. So if there was ever a regional disaster, like a Katrina or something like that,
right,
we don't have any other offsite backup, you know, outside of the region. So they are aware of that. And we've got a couple customers that, you know, that was enough to make them go to a different solution of some kind, whether it was with Amazon's cloud services or something along those lines. But, you know, most of my clients, they realize that they know that the chances of something like that happening are obviously extremely minimal. And they're comfortable with that. So as long as they know, and they're happy because with us, they pay, you know, a set price for the backup. With, you know, something like Amazon's cloud services, you know, it's going to be a structured price that's going to change, you know, depending on how much data you're backing up, the data travel to and fro and things like that.
Right.
So
yeah,
they like having that guaranteed rate.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, I was going to ask, are you reselling any other type of backup, you know, offsite backup solutions?
We're a referral partner for Backblaze.
Okay.
You know, originally did Mosey for a couple years, and when they changed their pricing structure a few years ago, that irritated me and irritated some clients. So I've been with Backblaze for a couple years now, and we use it mostly on residential computers because it's, you know, $50 for unlimited backup. It's super right. easy. You just, you know, basically create the account, hit go, and that's about it. And it takes care of everything else. And it's been rock solid.
Good. Okay. Now, you see a lot of residential customers using backup services, or most of them still going, why do I need backup?
Yeah, it's still a mix. It's still okay. a mix. And as we all know, most people don't learn until they learn the hard way. And I mean, I've even had some customers that even didn't learn after they should have learned the hard way. And I've gotten to the point now where if I've got a client that has been burned, you know, a second time, I'll usually just roll it into the cost of the repair, whatever it may be. You know, if it's a hard drive crash or whatever. You know, I had an accountant years ago that suffered like 3 crashes in 1 year, you know, from different hard drives. And he just, yeah, he kept buying the hard drives. He wanted to buy them himself. And I was helping him, you know, just migrate data and get back up and running and things like that. And he kept not learning. So finally on the last time, I was like, look, you know, your business and your customers' businesses are relying on this data and you keep having to recreate things from paper backup. It's ridiculous. So I think at the time, you know, I just basically rolled Mosey into the cost of my repair with him, and, you know, said, here it is. And I didn't even give him a choice. And that's what I've, you know, I've kind of learned over the years. With some clients, you know, once you get to kind of know them, some of them, you can't really even give them a choice because they're going to pick the wrong option. You just kind of need to use some tough love, and do it what you know is the right way. As long as you know you're not, you know, screwing them over and you're not leading them down the wrong path, you know, sometimes you just have to do it what you know is the right way and just say, this is it.
That's a good point. Yeah. Sometimes. Yeah. And if you're building it, especially for managed services, if you're building it into the price, you're just going, hey, here's what this is. Here's the managed service. Here's what it does. Here's the backup solution and all that. And just, you know, kind of roll it out. They don't know really what's happening, but then when they have a problem, you go, okay, hey, no problem. We get that back right now. And, you know, take care of business.
Exactly. I mean, I had a customer just 2 weeks ago who had a peer work server go down. They were running you and I originally had a scheduled conversation about a month ago, and this is that client where we had this horrible software vendor that their whole business runs off of, and they were having all these problems with this software. It's a legal real estate software called SoftPro, and the company that runs this software is just – it's a real pain to get them on the phone even though they're under maintenance. It's just – it's difficult. So what it ended up fast forwarding and turning out to be is that yes, the database was having problems that they needed to repair, but we found that we were starting to have some issues with this PureWork server. And it was a PureWork server that I put in place when I first started working with this customer 4 years ago. So the machine was 4 years old, and they had about 8 employees that kind of run off of this machine. And it was too underpowered at the time. And back then, I just didn't know the client well enough to really push them in the right direction. You know, I gave them like 3 options. I said, you know, here's your 3 options. And of course, they picked the cheapest option.
Of course.
Even though I strongly encouraged the highest option, they picked the cheapest option back then. Well, you know, their employees have been suffering with slow performance for the past couple of years just because it's just that machine just didn't have the horsepower necessary to run the software. Well, you know, a couple weeks ago, we finally replaced it with a newer piece of machinery, which, you know, this time I know this customer well enough that, you know, I'm not giving them any options. I said, you know, here's what it is. Here's the machine that you need. Here's what it's going to cost. Let's do it. And, you know, they cut the check and said, here, do it. And I mean, it was, what, 2.5 times the price of the original server from 3 years ago. But, you know, now it's running on a solid state drive because it doesn't require a whole lot of space, but they really can use that extra performance boost. And they've been running beautifully. I can't tell you the compliments that the employees have been giving me, you know, since I've gone in there, because it's so much faster.
Nice. Very cool. Well, I'll tell you what, do you have any parting tips that you want to give to anybody out there of things that maybe you've learned or things that you maybe wouldn't do again or things that you would do again?
Sure. A couple tips. First of all, if you are kind of starting out in this business and you're trying to think of a company name and more importantly, the web address that goes around it, don't put a hyphen in your name. Learn from my mistake. Oh, gosh. My original web address was thecompu-doctor.com because, of course, all the variations of computer doctor and the computer doctor, you know, were all taken. So that was the one that my stupid butt came up with, and I've regretted it since. And unfortunately, I've built my Google Apps, my grandfathered in Google Apps email system around that, you know, hyphenated URL. So learn from my mistake. Don't do something like that. Pick a different domain, even if it's a little bit longer than you want it to be. So that's tip one. Another tip that I'd like to kind of impart on some people is try and get in with a local news anchor in your area. You know, almost all news stations have one news anchor or news reporter that likes to do the scam alerts and things like that and reporting on that. We've got one here in town in particular, and I've done probably a dozen news stories over the past couple of years, and it's mostly been about, you know, scams and encryption infections. I actually just did an interview with them this morning where it's about, you know, kind of the latest wave of encryption infections, and it's great exposure for your business. I mean, I can't say that I've ever gotten anything directly out of it. I've never really had a client call me up and say, hey, I saw you on the news. I want to use your service. But where it's really helped, not only is it kind of a cool little ego boost seeing yourself on the news and showing yourself to your kids, you know, there's daddy up on TV, but it also really kind of solidifies you as an expert in your area and an expert in your field. And, you know, if you've ever got a client that's kind of on the fence about using your service or another person's service, you know, if you've got like a newsletter or a YouTube channel or something like that, you know, I've got most of my news stories that I put up on our YouTube channel, and then I put it up on our blog, and I just send those over to them. And, you know, or they usually will find them on their own when they're looking at our website and say, yeah, I saw you on the news. I watched a couple of your news interviews. And, you know, it helps really solidify you as an expert in your field, in your area. But if you're in the Richmond area, stay away from my news guy.
That's awesome. Well, Kevin, I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing with us today. I've learned some new stuff, and it's been fun talking to you.
Well, listen, I appreciate the opportunity. I can't tell you how much I've learned from your podcast over the year, and I really love what you've done with the Podnuts and the hosting that you brought to it. It's been fantastic, and it's always a pleasure to listen.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. If people want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
Probably the best way is just go to our website, richmondcomputerdoctor.com, and you can email me there. I'm also occasionally on the Podnuts and Technimble forums as the CompU Doctor. I don't get on as often as I'd like to because, you know, duty calls, of course.
Right.
But, you know, that's you know, probably the best way to find me. It's not too difficult to find me.
All right. Very cool.
So, and actually, you know what, Jeff? One thing that I would like to see maybe you and the other Podnuts guys do a show on sometime soon is how to hire an employee. I know Mike Techshow did a great kind of mock interview with Carrie Holzman a couple years ago. That was a fantastic show. But I'd like to hear, you know, y'all's roundtable experience of hiring employees, what type of things to do, what type of things to look out for. I know Rainey, he did a show, I think, on Podnuts Pro years ago about it. But I'd love to hear that again because I'm also kind of at that point where, you know, with growing my business, I might need to bring on another full-time employee sometime soon. So I'd love to hear experience from the guys that have already been down that road.
That is a great subject to, as a matter of fact, Matt Rainey's coming on here pretty soon. I definitely will bring that to the mix for our Sunday live call-in show and let people know about that because it is one of those things where, you know, a lot of us are getting to that point where it's like, okay, do I keep doing this myself or, you know, it's hard to let go or how can I do this? And there's many, many different ways of doing that.
So. Oh, yeah, because most of us are a bit of a control freak, of course, and we really want to make sure we maintain good customer service and control. And that's for me, that's kind of one of the hardest things that it is going to be to, you know, kind of let go of when I start bringing on somebody else to go out to customers' homes, go out to customers' businesses. And, you know, not only are they a representation of me, but they're a representation of my business and, you know, something that I've created. So,
yeah, I'm not a bit of a control freak. I am a control freak. Just ask my wife. She'll tell you. So, yeah, it is hard to let go sometimes. But in order to grow the business, you actually have to go down that path at a certain point, you know, whether it's going to be subcontracting or, you know, doing some sort of partnership or, you know, pulling an actual employee in. So I think that's a great subject. And I know there's a lot of people out there right now that are on the fence about that and they're looking for that information. So I think that's a great topic for a show.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, you guys can also find me on the Google Plus at Jeffrey Hallish or Twitter at TechNutPC. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on this show like Kevin was, email me at podnutsdaily@podnuts.com. If you guys want to leave a voicemail for the show, call 1-888-697-0162. And I want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. Don't forget, if you guys need business paperwork to get you started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for the TechNibble Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. If you guys could also do us a favor and leave us a rating and or review over on iTunes, that would help more people know about the show. You guys can also help support the Podnuts Network. The next time you're shopping at Amazon, go to podnuts.com/Amazon. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily.
My name is Jeff Hallish. I am the host of Podnuts, where Chris Carruthers and myself take live calls on the air to answer questions or to get answers from other computer repair techs. Every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can check it out over at podnuts.com/live.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.